Wel, croeso nôl bawb ac i'r bedwerydd sesiwn o'r diwrnod. Ac mae'n bleser gen i groesawu Mark Drakeford, sgwennydd y cabinet ar cyllid. We're delighted to have with us this afternoon Mark Drakeford, Assembly Member and the Cabinet Secretary for Finance. At present, I would say he has quite a lot on his plate. Managing an ever-tightening Welsh budget, managing the introduction of the first devolved taxation, managing negotiations with the government on Brexit, and probably paying for a chunk of the metro. And in what little time he has left over, he's one of the leading candidates in the contest for leadership of the Labour Party in Wales. A post that I understand goes hand in hand with the job of First Minister of Wales. So I think we have to thank Mark for fitting us into what is a formidable schedule. Mark Drakeford, croeso mawr.
Well, Geraint, diolch yn fawr. Diolch am y cyflwyniad caredig na. Diolch yn fawr am y cyfle I fod ma, prynhawn Mark I siarad da chi. Thank you very much indeed for the chance to be here today and to share some thoughts with you towards the end of what I hear as I've been in the conference over tea time. Heard from others what a successful day it has already been. I could see that I was following the session in which you've been talking about whether the metro is more than a railway, and while I've no pretensions to offer you anything particularly artistic, I am going to take that theme myself, because what I want to try and demonstrate to you is that simply in the responsibilities which I discharge in the Welsh Government, the metro is very much part of a far wider agenda than simply a transport initiative. I'm going to say something to you about the fact that I am responsible, it says in the list of things, for the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, in terms of having a government-wide oversight of that. And I want to say something about the way in which the principles of that act have had a real and direct impact on the way in which, through the Welsh Government, we have gone about the development of the Metro prospectus. I am going to say something about what I do as Finance Minister in relation to the project. I'm inevitably going to talk to you about Brexit and what the prospect of leaving the European Union might hold as far as projects of this sort might be in the future. And I want to end by saying something about decarbonisation and the work that the Welsh Government does. And I am myself a member of the Cabinet Committee on Decarbonisation. And by the time you've drawn together all those threads in Welsh Government activity, then quite certainly the metro is a lot more than just a railway. I wanted to begin by talking about the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act, because it is a landmark act in its own right. But the journey to demonstrate how the principles of that act are making a difference in the way that the conduct of Assembly business is undertaken is a challenging one, and an area where government ministers coming in front of committees during the budget period will undoubtedly have questions that will be put to them. But I think that the way in which procurement of the contract, in relation to the Wales and Borders rail service contract and in relation to the development of the metro, have both demonstrated in practice the five ways of working that the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act enjoins upon us, that we should go about the task of government with a focus on the long term, that the extent to which the actions we take today are preventative in relation to problems that we might face tomorrow, the way in which we integrate aspects of government so that our actions are always more than the sum of just the parts, the way in which that involves collaboration with interests and organizations beyond government, and how we involve citizens in the decisions that we make. All of those five things, long-term, preventative, integration, collaboration, and involvement, all of those, I think, are to be seen in the way that we have gone about these responsibilities. As far as collaboration is concerned, we have engaged extensively with industry, not just on the inputs into all of this, but trying to live out the sort of mantra of governments, that government is about outputs and outcomes, not simply what we put into the system. So, of course, we spend vast amounts of money in this area, and we invest all sorts of other time and skills and energy and so on. But what we have focused on in our discussions with industry is the outcomes we are seeking to achieve. And that discussion has included train operating companies, the infrastructure delivery companies, and manufacturing companies as well. We've also been focused, as I say, on the way in which the things we do today have an impact on issues which we know we will face in the future. It's why we created a sustainable and ethical procurement panel to advise on that procurement process. And the panel has been focused on supply chain issues, skills issues, and issues to do with the environment and culture. And it was a really committed attempt to put ethical procurement and sustainability at the centre of that procurement strategy. We've also been involved in extensive dialogue with bidders to make sure that we integrate the metro proposals with other wider plans of government. It's why we were able to take the opportunity to extend the railway from Coryton to the proposed cancer treatment at Velindre. It's why we have taken the opportunity to use the service improvements that the metro will bring to develop the long-term hubs, strategic hubs, across the South Wales valleys. And that part of what we are doing is absolutely the result of the involvement of local people in the way that the South Wales Valleys Plan has been developed. And that's a series of conversations in all sorts of ways and in all sorts of places, from formal conferences of this sort at one end of the spectrum to individual conversations in community settings at the other. The theme that arose in all of those discussions for us as a government was the need to do everything we can in those communities to create a vibrant economic future, to put the other things we do, including the creation of a reliable integrated transport system, to the finding of jobs, to the expansion of businesses, and to the attraction of new investment to places along that valley's landscape. So, in that sense, it is absolutely the case that the metro project is not simply about dealing with today's transport problems. It is how we provide opportunities for the future and in the long term, not just in terms of transport, but in the way in which metro infrastructure will have an impact on economic possibilities for people well beyond today. So, in the way in which we have gone about developing the project, that whole series of injunctions that the Wellbeing of Future Generations Act brings have been, I think, more central, more pivotal to the way in which we have made these decisions than would ever have been the case had that act not been there to guide us in the way we conduct Welsh government affairs now and into the future. Of course, as Finance Minister, I take a different and close interest in the metro and the things that goes with it. It is a major funding programme as far as the Welsh Government is concerned. And in an era in which budgets are forever contracting, while the possibilities to deploy funding go on expanding, you can be sure that every budget line that we possess are gone over, discussed, sometimes argued over during the 6 months in which a budget is in gestation. By the time I came to lay the outline draft budget of the Welsh Government on Tuesday last week, I was able to announce almost £43 million of new capital funding over the next 2 years to support the development of the Taff's Well rail depot that will house and service 36 of the new metro vehicles operating on the Taff Vale lines. We are also investing, as you know, in the new Taff Vale development in Pontypridd that will incorporate the headquarters for Transport for Wales. And that is in addition to those very large sums of money which we have had to set aside in our future budgeting plans to make a reality of the Metro proposals. Now, I said I would have to mention Brexit, and I do so in the context of the announcement that the First Minister made on Thursday last week that £119 million of European Union funding has been secured to progress work on the South Wales Metro. The investment will go towards improving infrastructure to accommodate the doubling of the number of trains to the heads of the valley stations from 2 per hour to 4, and it will be used to modernise stations to further improve rail users' journeys. Now, you will understand that with the UK leaving the European Union in March of next year, then the future of the funding that we have enjoyed hitherto from the European Union and our ability to put it to work for major projects of this kind remains a real anxiety here in Wales. From my perspective, as the person who conducts negotiations with the UK government on behalf of the Welsh government in the Brexit arena, I continue to beat the drum at every opportunity that I have. I will be with the Secretary of State for exiting the European Union and the Deputy Prime Minister on Thursday of next week. I will be in the Treasury on Wednesday of next week. And on each occasion, I repeat time after time to UK ministers the absolute guarantee that Welsh people were offered by the Conservative Party in the lead-up to the referendum in June 2016 that Wales would not be a penny worse off as a result of leaving the European Union than we have been as a result of our membership. That promise was made to people and undoubtedly influenced the way in which some people chose to cast their vote in that referendum. Now, the UK government have an absolute obligation to deliver on the promise that they made. Talk of a prosperity fund, a shared prosperity fund, raises anxieties for me and others that what the UK government has in mind is taking money away from Wales and sharing it with those acute social needs in the royal boroughs of Berkshire and other parts that at the moment don't benefit from European funding. Now, Wales gets money from the European Union, not because we got lucky, not because we won it in a raffle, but because our needs demonstrate within the rule book that the European Union lays down that our needs merit the funding that we get. Those needs will not have gone away on the 30th of March next year. And it is absolutely for the UK government to ensure that the money that will allow us to work on the South Wales Metro is available to us to work on other and similar projects beyond the European Union, and that those decisions need to be made here in Wales. they need to be made as close as possible to where those decisions matter the most, and they need to be made by those people who understand those conditions and those needs far better than anyone sitting in Whitehall will ever be able to contemplate. So that is the Brexit challenge as it applies absolutely directly in the subject of today's conference, and that is the discussion that remains alive and from time to time fairly pointed with our UK colleagues. I want to end by talking about decarbonisation, because if the metro is about the long term, if it is about thinking of today's needs alongside those of tomorrow, then having a longer term pipeline allows suppliers to exceed the sustainability targets already set by Transport for Wales, including carbon reduction alongside skills and training development. It will, we know, increase social mobility and widen access for people, but it will also be a really important part of our commitment to carbon reduction, with the energy for overhead wires coming from 100% zero carbon energy, with 50% of that sourced in Wales and designed from the outset to encourage active travel, to include cycling possibilities, and to link directly with other active travel routes in which the government is investing. So I just wanted to set that prospectus out in front of you this afternoon. I just wanted to try to demonstrate briefly the way in which, with the South Wales Metro, the approach that we take across government is not simply to think of this in a transport sense, important as it is, but to use it as an exemplar of other things that we are able to achieve, to make sure that other key agendas that we have here in Wales are as aligned as possible with what the Metro will bring to us, and by doing things in that way, to deliver on a far wider series of agendas that matter to people here in Wales. Diolch yn fawr. Thank you very much indeed.
I thank Mark Grapefoot on your behalf, and I'm delighted to say that Mark is going to stay with us for the coming session. Let me turn then to our panel. We have on my immediate right Mark Hooper, the founder of the cooperative IndyCube. We have then Victoria Winkler, who is, I have to say, a late addition to our panel, but we're very grateful to you, Victoria, for joining us. Victoria has been director of the Bevan Foundation since 2002 and is a Wales advisor to the Joseph Rowntree Foundation. And then we have Wendy Maiden, who, with Francesca Sartorio, has penned one of the essays in the book that we are publishing with this conference. She works with the Urbanist design team and as a design advisor to the Design Commission for Wales. And no stranger to any of us, Professor Brian Morgan, Director of the Creative Leadership and Enterprise Centre at Cardiff Met. Brian, as we all know, has kept a pretty sharp eye on most economic initiatives in this land of ours for the last 30 years. You know, probably not more than that, Brian, but at least 30 years. as with the last session, I'm going to ask each of the speakers to open. Maybe we'll do it from the other. We'll start with Brian. Just a few minutes introduction, your first thoughts on the Metro.
Well, thank you, Chair. As we've heard today from earlier speakers, and particularly, of course, from the Cabinet Secretary, who stole my thunder in a number of areas very, very, very nicely and very, very well put across, the Metro has potential benefits on a huge scale, in both the economic and social benefits as well as environmental benefits. Most of these derive from connectivity, better connectivity that the Metro will offer. And in terms of economic benefits, we'll have a huge reduction in commuting costs, and in commuting, we'll have an increase in commuting capacity, and these in particular will lead to productivity growth, business development opportunities, etc. And most importantly, a lot of these opportunities will flow to small businesses and social enterprises. And keeping on that social theme, there will be huge community benefits as well in terms of better access to social care, to hospitals, etc., for the community. So there's this huge economic and social benefits, and then we've got environmental benefits in terms of the modal shift that will shift some of the 100,000 commuters coming into Cardiff and Newport from cars to the train. And 25% of CO2 emissions in our region come from cars. So that sort of modal shift will have huge environmental benefits. But the point is, I suppose, how do we maximise this potential opportunity, these potential benefits? And how do we turn this potential, in fact, into a reality? Well, first of all, in the short term, we must make sure that the construction impact multiplier of the metro is maximised. And that typically means, you know, bringing more local firms into that supply chain. And it will require procurement rules to be judiciously applied. And we look to the Welsh Government here, and the Cabinet Secretary in particular, to look at how, in the exit from Europe, we can make better use of procurement rules outside of the state aid's environment, which has restricted us significantly in the past. But moving on to the medium term and longer term benefits, you know, again, we need to facilitate business growth clusters and really harness what we call those agglomeration economies that James Price highlighted this morning. And people might ask, you know, what are these? I mean, in general terms, agglomeration economies come from high-density clusters of firms that are grouped together in a way that allows them to use more local knowledge in a creative way, make better use of the of intermediate products in the production process, and thereby to increase creativity and innovation. And in the specific context of the metro, I think there's going to be a huge increase in valuable land around metros. And we must not allow that valuable land to just be hived off, if you like. That valuable land must be made maximised use of in terms of the new stations and those corridors, those rapid transport corridors around them. So there's a huge ask out there as to how we maximise those benefits. And, of course, fundamentally, for me, it's like creating a huge bid, a business improvement district, for that whole area of the metro. Now, how do you achieve this, in fact? You know, how do you create a huge bid? Well, you need to create some sort of vehicle. And I've called this vehicle the Metro Growth Team. That will need to be created, some sort of vehicle that is out there to identify business development prospects and skills needs, maximise local content, and develop the synergies that we've all been talking about with the regional park and the airport, etc. And that Metro Growth Team should put together and develop and put in place a coordinated investment plan to maximise those longer-term catalytic impacts of an embedded metro. Otherwise, I'm afraid, we'll just end up with a railway that is just a nicer way to travel around South Wales.
Anyway, that's a cracking start. I'm going to come to Mark. I'm going to do it this way around, if I may. I'll come to Mark next, if I may, because you have a lot more to say, I think, on the foundational economy.
I do. Thanks. I think it's quite interesting, and picking up from Mark's point as well about this having further benefits, I think that we need to consider the whole thing in a different context. And I wonder whether we've got a situation whereby the key issues that we're facing in South Wales at the moment are not necessarily going to be addressed in the way we've set up the metro today. So, for example, we've seen its life expectancy has fallen behind in Wales. How is the metro going to start to solve issues like that? We've got an issue of we're going to hit 40% child poverty in Wales. How can the metro start to resolve issues like that? We've got an issue of, we've talked about, and it came out in the sense in the last group as well, talking about the value of social capital. If social capital is the thing that we should be focusing our efforts in, how can the metro make sure that we do more to improve social capital and not take it away. Because there's a concern, and Mark and I have spoken at length over many a coffee about this, about if there's a, if we're just trying to drag everything into Cardiff and the benefits of agglomeration do actually work, will they ever leave Cardiff? Wealth is sticky. And if we deliver the wealth into the centre of Cardiff, it won't do the things that we want it to do for the rest of the economy. And these are things that if we don't start to talk about them now and address them now, we'll be stuck with them forever. Because the other thing that concerns me, we're about to, again, Mark talked about the issue of, sorry, there's two Marks in the corner then. The Cabinet Secretary talked about the impact of Brexit that's coming to, you know, hit us quite hard at the moment. If we're in a, if we're in a situation where we're looking at these impacts and they start to actually hit our economies harder and we can't achieve the benefits of these X thousand jobs, what will the metro, what will the benefit of the metro be? Are there other things that will have a wider benefit? And if the, if it is a nicer way to get around South Wales, that may not be a bad thing, because being able to move across the valleys as well is as important as moving down to other parts of the community. Because these communities, we heard earlier that there's tension between these communities. And that tension's built up of a, if it's still there, it's built up of a lifetime of what's been happening to those communities for such a long time. And this is one of the opportunities to start to address that. You know, today there was a report out from the IPCC that talked about this is our last chance to realise that climate change is coming to effect. So I don't think there's any... But you can sit in this room and say, this isn't a better way to travel than sitting in a car. But actually, should we be traveling so much anyway? The organisation that I work with, one of the things that we're trying to do is stop people commuting. Because there's a benefit of staying in your local communities that's beyond just sitting in a car. It's the ability to be able to, you know, get up in the morning and take your child to school instead of leaving that to somebody else to do. It's the ability to be able to engage in local community activities because you can. Because you've got the time to do it. So how do we make sure that we take these rail lines? And I just, as I was sitting here, I was thinking about, my granddad was a railway driver and a fireman before us. So one of the things, he'd be really proud of me talking about railways sitting up here as well. But when he was a railwayman, there was a real extractive need for these railways. They were there to be able to extract the coal out of the valleys and get rid of it, and it just left our communities. If we do the same thing again with this, when we've got an opportunity to do something different, I think we'll look at this and reflect and think we've made a big mistake. So if we don't think differently, we'll end up with the same as we've always done. This is not about GVA. I think this is more, should be more about social capital and focusing on things like that. So I think this is a good chance to think again.
Mark, many thanks. Victoria, a lot of the Bevan Foundation's emphasis has been on social capital.
We've done a lot of work on that, but I wanted to talk a little bit about the institutions, because that was the title I was given. And I thought it would be useful to come back to first principles and ask, what do we want from our institutions? I think the first thing is they need to be accountable and representative of our population. They need to be fit for purpose, so they need to be at the right spatial scale, they need to have the right mix of powers, and they need to have resources. And they need to be resilient, so that they are not only fit for purpose now, but they have some degree of being future-proof. And I think it's very clear we don't have those institutional structures at the moment. I'm not expecting a round of applause here, but I think Cardiff Capital Region is opaque and it's inaccessible. It is very difficult. it is very difficult to find out what is going on, and even if you do, it's far from clear who you object to, who you complain about, just where you go with your placard if that's what you want to do. Is it fit for purpose? Well, that's a moot point as well. If you look at how people live, the geography of South East Wales at the moment is not one of a single region. And is it future-proof? Well, I wonder about that too. The whole concept is based on long-distance commuting, which may well not last into the next 10, 15 years. So what do we do? Well, I think we need institutions that are capable of delivering an inclusive economy. And that's an economy that's inclusive not only geographically, So it brings as many benefits to the heads of the valleys as it does to Cardiff, but also one that's inclusive socially so that we eradicate poverty in South East Wales. To do this, we need to dump the stereotypes. I have been grinding my teeth and sitting on my hands during some of this debate as people have talked about visiting the valleys, so it might be somewhere where you want to live, or attracting artists to the valleys and other examples. Lots of us, including myself, live there now and choose to live there. Artists live there now and choose to live there. There are more people in poverty in Cardiff than there are in the South Wales valleys. So we need to take those old glasses off and get some nice new ones that mean we can see what's under our noses. We need to engage with people and listen to them, not one way, but so we can understand what their priorities are and how they live. And when we do that, you will hear that actually for most people, trains don't matter. They are a way of getting from A to B, and at the moment, they don't often run where people want to go. One of the biggest things that people don't realise is that there is now something called a travel-to-work area that covers the heads of the valleys, and that's because more people commute across the top of the valleys than commute north-south, and we need to listen to that and understand it. And we need to be wary of overselling the metro. I think there's a huge risk that it will be oversold in the same way as the structural funds were oversold as something that will be transformative. It might transform some parts of South East Wales, but I can tell you that in places like Tredegar and Ebervale, its chances of transforming those communities is slim. And we all know what people did when they saw the structural funds not delivering. So I think we have a real opportunity here, not necessarily to build our institutions around a metro, but to think more deeply about what kind of South East Wales we want to see and how we can unleash the opportunity and make it more inclusive. And I'm going to be very quick because I know I've been going on. But I do think the time has come, having been resistant to the idea for many years, I do see we have a delivery gap between what the Welsh Government is able to do and has the powers and skill sets to do, and what local authorities who've been completely denuded of their economic development capacity can deliver as well. I don't think we need a development agency, but I do think we need people on the ground who can deliver. Thank you.
Victoria, many thanks. Now, Wendy, you've addressed various tiers of development in your essay for this conference.
Now I'm cautious to oversell it. I do see that Metro has the potential to be a catalyst to create place-based, transit-oriented environments, but not on its own, as you've identified. If we create these places, we can live more sustainably, achieve some of the goals that the Cabinet Secretary identified around active travel and well-being of future generations, but also to maximise the value of the public investment, of course. But we're embedding and retrofitting this transit system into an existing environment, which is really challenging in terms of the built environment, the natural environment, socioeconomic context. So it's imperative that we look at it through multiple scales. So, of course, at the regional scale, we have to think about connectivity and growth, green environment, for example. And then around the individual stations or the nodes, we need to think about land uses. And the first and last mile was brought up recently, which I thought was interesting to flag. And then down to specific development sites that we have and how we can design those to encourage a modal shift and encourage use of the transit system. And I think it's important to flag it works both ways. So the metro may have a positive impact on a place, but also the design of that place impacts the ridership numbers and encourages that modal shift that we're after. And as has been brought up a few times today, the local authorities can't work independently of each other. They'll each have different strengths and may benefit from the metro in different ways, so we need to be careful that they try not to compete, but also complement each other. So to deliver that, we've considered this regional coordination is necessary to identify and plan for these different functions and this connectivity just beyond the transport system. But strategic planning is specialist. It's and it's a specialism that we kind of haven't used in Wales for a while. It needs to be based on thorough analysis, and it takes a holistic approach beyond transport to look at the economy, housing, heritage, tourism. The leader of Bridge and Council, I thought it was really encouraging that he's optimistic about the capacity of the City Region Cabinet. However, I'm not convinced that we have the skills and resource to deliver it at present. In addition, the specialist engagement that we may need in order to deliver a strategic development plan that works for everybody and not just for the specialists that are around the table, and also the political will and leadership to actually make that happen, which would involve a massive culture change to be more positive and proactive. And I think while I have the floor, as a youngish person, I think this young people, I mean, we can be a resource, of course, and we're talking about the lack of resources mainly in terms of finance, but accessing the skills of universities and undertaking charrettes like the one we discussed at in Heritage, where you're including more people, can flag new ideas and be a bit more creative and raise some of these innovative ideas that people have brought up today. So I think the universities and that thinking outside the box is kind of imperative to access young people like me.
My guess is a lot of people listening to this would be a bit worried. We seem to have a team capable of delivering a railway. You're not so sure we've got a team to deliver the benefits that might actually accrue from that. Victoria, you were quite critical of what exists. You know. How would you want to change it?
I think probably the structures of Cardiff Capital Region, I think we only now have one. We did have two for a while. But I think the structures were necessary to get to where we are, but I think there are some real question marks about the transparency and the decision-making processes and how one influences them. I do think the relationship between the Valleys Task Force and the Cardiff Capital Region is perhaps not a clear one, and I think the time has probably come for some delivery action, particularly around what the Valleys Task Force is trying to do, and some vision and something to move quickly.
I mean, I know, Brian, you want to come in, but I mean, what we've heard earlier today, we've talked about the role of the Welsh Government, Transport for Wales, Regional Transport Authority, 10 local authorities, ideas for a metro growth team, ideas for a development board for the Valleys, you know. How do we cut through this? Because, you know, time surely is of the essence. And, you know, it worries me that when I talk privately to people, the people in Welsh Government haven't really got a good word to say about local authorities, and local authorities haven't got a good word to say about the Welsh Government. You know, how do we actually break through this?
Yeah, and most business people don't have a very good word to say about either. And that's the problem, I think. But we do need a delivery vehicle. And I don't think, you know, I mean, it's a bit of a cop-out, I'm afraid, from Victoria to say we do need people on the ground. We need a delivery vehicle, a properly resourced delivery vehicle to pull all these strands together. I mean, we did have one in the Cardiff Bay Development Corporation. You know, it did a small little job in an area with resources, was able to achieve something. You know, unless we actually commit that level of resource, I'm afraid that we will just see all these different ideas going along without the proper delivery.
Can I just tease out a detail there? When you talk about a development board, for which area? The whole of the region or a part of the region?
For the metro region.
The whole south?
The whole of the metro region, yes.
Okay.
And I think then we will have better integration between the Valleys Task Force and that organisation. And similarly between the city regions. I mean, Victoria said there used to be two Cardiff City Region. Yeah, there was one that was supposed to be set up as the delivery vehicle that was going to pull all these things together. In the end, we ended up with 10 local authority leaders talking about projects in the future.
Right. I think that's enough to set up the debate. Questions on the floor. Paul.
Thank you. I promise not to talk about Pontyclean.
Go on.
I really do think that we ought to, we've got a puzzle in that we've got ambitions for South East Wales, we've got investment plans for South East Wales, and we want to make sure they're properly coordinated and function to best effect. If we look elsewhere in the world, I've spent time recently in Southeast Sweden, Western Netherlands, Vancouver area. The mechanisms which are being talked about are created by and are owned by the constituent local authorities. The Europeans refer to it as intermunicipal cooperation. They've practiced it for decades. It is respected by central government, and it delivers what we were talking about earlier this afternoon, the local engagement that is crucial, and the capacity to actually think strategically across the region. There is no reason why the mechanisms that Hugh was talking about this morning, that I remember Mark Drakeford facilitated when they came about, could not deliver that mechanism, could not create the resource of professionals to support it in order to deliver. If the alternative is a Cardiff Bay Development Corporation, for heaven's sake, count me out. We are, I suggest, a gathering of the Welsh Crachach. That is a Crachach solution. It is a bunch of unaccountable, appointed professionals imposing their will on others. No, thank you.
Can I just pick up on Paul's question and ask the panel? Is part of the problem here that if you wanted to go down Paul's route of a collaborative approach to this, which is presumably what is in place now, is part of the problem that the authorities themselves are actually being denuded of staff? We heard this morning that planning departments are cut by 50% and so on. Do we actually have the people to actually run that collaborative process?
I do think the impact of austerity, notwithstanding the Cabinet Secretary's efforts, on local authorities have been significant. And I've come across several local authorities recently who have no economic development capacity anymore, just none. All their staff have gone. And what I will say to back Paul is that if it hadn't been for local authorities in the late 1980s and early 1990s, and I know because I was there, we would not have had the European funding that we've enjoyed today, and that is funding Metro. That idea came from the bottom up and was taken in a big fight through the then Welsh office and up to UK government. And it was not something that was given on a plate, and it wasn't something that was imposed. And if you want to have that understanding and that energy and that innovation, it has to be rooted in the communities you're supposed to help.
Wendy, do you want to come in?
Yeah, I agree that the putting together the strategic plan should be done by local authorities. They're the most well-informed. They have access to people on the ground. However, I'd suggest at present local authority plan departments are surviving. So in order to really facilitate that strategic development plan, we'd need to provide resource and also skills training in strategic planning, because we don't do that. So local authority planners will be specialists in local planning. So if we're going to deliver a strategic plan which is backed up by thorough site analysis and covers all the holistic issues that we've discussed, then we'd need training as well as resource.
Okay. Two other questions here. Gentleman here.
Yes, Lynn Einan, Bhutan Labour Party. First, to reiterate the point that we do not want to repeat the experience of the Cardiff Bay Development Corporation, because that was done on the basis, on an assumption, that the local population, the resident population, was not going to be part of that solution, and indeed a large part of the development was going to be built behind large gates because the local population was seen as too dangerous and too difficult to want to be involved with that. Let's not impose that on the rest of South Wales.
Second question
I wanted to ask was was about buses, which have hardly featured in this at all, and one of the institutional questions we have to ask is about the scope of Transport for Wales, which compared to, say, Transport for London, has a much narrower brief. Now, the reality is that unless we tackle the bus question, we will not provide a solution that is comprehensive for South East Wales. There are several reasons for that. One is transport within cities. One is the difficulty of travel across the valleys. Now the infrastructure is gone. And an additional point is, unless the transport network is comprehensive in terms of the times of the day and week it runs, people will buy cars because they need to see family in the evenings or entertain themselves on Sundays. And once they have a car, it's cheaper and easier to use it during the week.
Okay. Thank you. Gentleman in the back.
Yes, Christian Schmidt from Monmouthshire County Council. Mark Berry's original metro proposals were from 2011, and we had a small regional transport authority then, which could have been the basis for something to deliver this. Instead, it got abolished then. We now have got Transport for Wales and the Regional Transport Authority, which between them can deliver the transport aspect of the metro, the rail aspect, and have started to look at the bus aspects as well. But there seems to be no mechanism to look at the wider things which we've discussed today in terms of economic development, planning, culture, and so on. But because of the hiccup which we had since 2011, we probably have already lost 2 or 3 years. So the question is now, is hearing from the panel about what else needs to be done, and that we currently only have got the opportunity to deliver the transport aspects, should we actually pause this and maybe think about 2 years for organization development, so we can then, when we deliver something, to get better outcomes? Or shall we actually move on now and to deliver, shall we say, a box standard metro system like they've got in every other similar sized conurbation in continental Europe? Because I think this is really the question now. We can deliver some of the transport stuff now, or we can actually say, let's wait for a couple of more years, bearing in mind that in the past, I think there has already been delay, and it hasn't really led to any better organizations than what we've got at the moment.
I think I'd probably refer you to Hilary Marquand's quote from 1936. Would you fancy a pause, Brian?
Yeah, some great points made here. Obviously, choosing Cardiff Bay Development Corporation, obviously with some of the audience here, wasn't a great example. But, you know, you can build these things up. You don't have to have them imposed in this way. Look at the Greater Manchester Combined Authority. You know, being brought together, has got a LEP, has got a local economic group alongside it, and it is resourced. You know, that's the sort of thing I think we need in Wales. A Greater Manchester-type combined authority, well-resourced, to do this strategic planning and achieve these economic benefits that they seem to be doing up in Manchester. And they've been doing it for 15 years. We've had devolution for 20 years, and we still can't do it.
Mark. Oldham, Bury, Rochdale, all of these places are ignored. So the centre of Manchester is growing quickly. The outside of Manchester, which is what we're talking about, and a lot of the effort we spent this morning, has not been growing as quickly. And these are the sort of things I tend to agree with the gentleman at the back in terms of pausing this. And it isn't to pause it not to deliver it. It's to pause it to actually think about what we want to do. Because there are other things that are heading our way, which they didn't get considered really when we started talking about the city deal at any level. The effects of automation. Automation in this account, when we've got call centres, when we've got, these are things that will disappear with automation and with robotics. Driverless vehicles. What are the solutions for those sort of issues? And I think there's a real risk that we deliver something that isn't fit for purpose when it gets delivered, and it isn't fit for purpose because it isn't something we've considered. The why, I think, is the critical thing. Okay.
Question, Ian Courtney.
If I may, I've got an observation. And Mark Drakeford, this is directed towards you in some ways. We've heard a number of people talk about the desire for greater cooperation, interdepartmental working, and I think what I have heard a politician, a predecessor of yours in the cabinet, Mark, talk about the silo mentality. I have to say that comes as a great shock to me, because if history tells us anything, it is a couple of things. One is that politicians will the ends but never will the means successfully. The other is that our political culture is almost set up in such a way that departmentalitis will always reign supreme. So I suppose the question I'm putting to both the panel and Mark is maybe we need a fundamental revolution in our political culture in Wales.
I won't go straight to Mark on that, but I have a comment on that, Brian.
Well, he has put his finger on it. I mean, the reason that we've had 20 years, I think, of devolution and we haven't achieved as much as we could is because of that silo mentality that you've identified there. We do need to pull together, but as I say, at a Wales level, it's very complicated. This is why I think at a regional level, you can do more of these combined authority-type resourced development groups that can achieve something in a far more focused way than referring everything back to the Bay.
Okay. Jerry Holton. Sorry. Here we are. Front row.
Thanks. I've got a question, because nobody's mentioned fares. You know, I don't know what this metro is. If you're charging a tenner as a return fare from Merthyr to Cardiff, it'll be very useful for yuppies in Cardiff to buy a cheap house up the valleys and then come into work. It'll be quite useful for civil servants in Cardiff who've been told to go and work in Merthyr to get up there without taking the car. But nobody on benefits is going to use it to get to a job in Taffswell if it's going to cost a tenner. Now, if it's going to be free, it might actually help those marginal people. Until we know what this thing is in terms of fares, we don't know what we're talking about. Now, if it's free, there's going to be a hell of a burden on the taxpayer or on somebody because the subsidy will be large. So there's a huge choice here. Are we going to make this a low-cost network in an effort to really involve those ordinary people we're all paying lip service to, or are we going to make it pay for itself, in which case it's going to be a yuppie system? And if we're going to make it free, or not free, but very low cost, you know, a quid to get to Cardiff and back, how the hell are we going to pay for it? Nobody's told me anything about the finances here. When I come to Wales, I always know I'm going to hear a lot of words, and I'm never going to hear any numbers.
Right, it's a big transport for Wales out on the platform. Victoria.
The Bevan Foundation did a very quick calculation in respect of bus transport, and we reckoned that if you took the current Welsh Government spend on concessionary fares, on the other various bits and bobs, and the local authority spend on bus, and you divided it by the number of passengers or vehicle kilometres, there was lots of different ways of cutting it, you could come quite close to either free bus service or a nominal amount, sort of 50p per trip type bus service. I don't know how the figures work with Metro, but we've recommended that the maximum fare, there should be a capped fare, a bit like operates on London Transport, and that capped fare should be a maximum of an hour's pay at the minimum wage. So nobody travelling a distance or a complicated journey, which is where your costs really ramp up, actually is penalised by paying more than an hour's worth that they get as pay.
And do you know whether these ideas are being studied by Transport for Wales? You don't know.
Right.
Is there anybody from Transport for Wales who might say? Yep.
Thanks, Hugh David Bregend. I was speaking earlier about the city deal, but perhaps I wasn't very clear about it. I know there's been some criticism this afternoon. It's a 1.2 billion city deal. That's the biggest city deal in the UK. It's bigger than the Manchester one. It was only brought to Wales by the 10 city region authorities working together. We're not talking about projects in the future. Jest comes from Professor Morgan. I nearly promoted you then, or demoted you. Sorry about that. We're actually talking about projects now. So there's the world's first semiconductor cluster, and we've supported that foundry in Newport. Just on Victoria's point, I think we probably do need to do more to promote the work of the city region and the city cabinet, and I am going to come on to a question. The question is, would you all like to come to the next cabinet meeting? They are public meetings, so there's nothing opaque about them. The reports, the documents, the strategies are all public strategies. Each and every one of the 10 members of that authority are the leaders of those authorities. They are elected by their councils, so they're democratically elected. The last thing we need in Wales is another quango like the Cardiff Corporation. We want accountability to lie with the people through their democratically elected representatives.
I wondered, Hugh, because you're the only cabinet leader here today, I take that about the meetings of the cabinet. But what is the scale of the sort of regional planning team that actually is working to deliver the objectives that the cabinet set? Is it simply people from the 10 local authorities on the fringes of their time, or is there a dedicated regional team?
So we're building up a dedicated team. There are some on secondment, but we are scaling that up at pace. There is the issue that was identified earlier in terms of a shortage of professionals, but again, that's something that we are looking at, and indeed we have to be careful to, certainly in terms of capacity and planning, not to rob Peter to pay Paul. So what we can't do is undermine the local planning functions by creating a massive team overnight of a strategic planning team that leaves our local authorities unable to deliver on that function. But it is something we're working on at the moment.
Okay, final question. Sorry, a gentleman here, and then...
Okay, just say I'm,
you've got the microphone, and one here too.
I'm very pleased Jerry Holtham raised the question of fares, because we've talked about engagement, and I'm sure what a lot of people in the area will ask when the thing gets closer to realisation is, how much is it going to cost them if they use it? And one of the early tests of that will be what the Welsh Government decides to do now and in the future on its concessionary fares policy, because also the interplay with the bus, and also what the policy will be for the metro and the concessionary fares policy will be. Will people with concessionary passes be able to use them? And it sounds insignificant, and I know you've been concentrating on economic matters, but social capital's also been mentioned. And we've also got, talking about outcomes, loneliness, interconnectedness. It applies to people who are no longer in work as well as those who are.
Okay, gentlemen here.
Thank you, Chair. Roland Bennett, Rail Future. Fares always become emotive, I think, with people. The present situation is the Cardiff City region has concentric fares on Cardiff, five zones. The outer zones, the fares are about 6.20 to Cardiff, and that includes Maesteg, Ebbw Vale, and all the central valleys. The only station within the region that does not get that particular fare is Pyle, which seems to be forgotten at the west of the region. This morning, the presentation said that they were going to flatten fares. But if flattening fares is going to be the same through the whole of the region, the fares have to be the same from places like Pyle, Maesteg, Ebbw Vale, as well as the central area that's being developed by the metro. If you take it a step further, there are some people who can't get to the train. They have to depend on buses to get into Cardiff. So therefore, the maximum fare for a bus journey into Cardiff should again be the same as that flattened fare. That is equal for everybody who is paying for their fares. I won't go into the debate with concessionary fares or reduced fares, but that must be available if there is ticket machines and credit card use. Those reductions must be available on those cards. But let's have something that is for all within the Cardiff City area, within the greater metro area. Let's have an equalisation of fares for everybody, whether they travel by metro or travel by bus.
Good, thank you. And final question here on the left.
Mark Youngman here again. So I wanted to follow on from Jerry Holtham's point, actually, about fares, because throughout the whole day, not a lot has been discussed about where some of the money is coming from outside of City Deal or even the franchise, because there is ongoing cost. There's an ongoing revenue cost. And Brian Morgan made a very good point about, you know, if we have regional authorities, they've got to be funded somehow. They've got to have the resources. Now, what the likes of London do, alongside having capped fares, is actually, like my parents live in London, don't make anywhere near use of the London Transport Network, but they subsidise some of that through their council tax. And in Greater Manchester and in other regional authorities, a precept is put on your council tax, which goes towards building up a fund that is used to fund, you know, the ongoing costs associated with possibly free buses, which I don't, you know, necessarily agree with from a wider perspective. But then last week we had, you know, the excellent announcement again that we're going to lose the tolls, but that's 50 million revenue probably that's, you know, we can't use in the future. But even worse than that, we had it announced that the fuel duty on our cars has been frozen for a ninth year. Now, the sum mentioned, and I don't know what the Barnett formula calculation would be for Wales, was £9 billion. Now, accepting that there might be some loss of that £9 billion saving out of fuel duty being frozen, if we actually had to pay the right costs for travelling by car, we may find that we've actually got more money available to us to spend on things like going beyond the metro, to improving the culture and to dealing with the connectivity. But at the moment, nobody, well, I see a reluctance to actually tackle some of the issues about the biggest elephant in the room, which is trying to discourage car use. Car use is free to many people's eyes. The tolls are going, we offer free parking, we've frozen fuel duty, and yet we don't want to seem to penalise those of us who drive a car to actually provide a better society for us all.
Thank you for that. We are running out of time. We want to keep this conference to the timetable. Let me just say, I think this has been a really valuable discussion. There are a host of questions that it has thrown up. It's clear that the Metro is not going to be like some sort of Swiss Army knife that can do absolutely everything, including taking stones out of horses' hooves. But I suppose the thought that strikes me is that even if it is not that, it maybe has the potential simply to make us think about the place differently. And in that sense, it is possibly a huge psychological gain. The late Rhodri Morgan often used to tell Wales to be more confident. I hate to disagree with the deceased, but my wife, who is involved in mental health, always says to me that the last thing you should tell a patient is to be more confident. What you've got to tell the patient is to do different things. And when they do different things, confidence actually comes. And maybe this is really what the Metro is about. So let me thank all four members of the panel. I think we're going to do Christina Rees. At this time in the affairs of this country, it's very good to have a view not only from Cardiff Bay, but also from Westminster. So it's a great pleasure to introduce Christina Rees, MP for Neath, Shadow Secretary of State for Wales. She is a barrister. She was for many, many years a councillor and an international sportswoman. And I hope that somebody has warned Alan Cairns that she has a black belt in judo. She was elected to Parliament in 2015, was for a short time the Shadow Justice Minister before becoming the Shadow Secretary of State in 2017. And she is, of course, one of those MPs who are now denied an electrified rail service to her constituency. Christina Rees.
Well, thank you, Geraint. I won't tell him if you won't. It's an absolute pleasure to be able to speak on this platform today as Shadow Secretary of State for Wales, but I am rather keen to get rid of the shadow bit. For those of you who know me, you know that I'm passionate about public transport and passionate about trains. But trains aren't so passionate about me. And I'm a well-known travel jinx. In fact, people pay me not to travel with them. So what happened this morning? We went for the 8:41 train from Neath. Train came on time. We got on the train. Everything's fine. Stopped at Bridgend. And this got nothing to do with Councillor Hugh David getting on with Bridgend. Carried on. And got to Pontyclun, Paul. And then the train ground to a halt. So we had a very pleasant half hour outside Pontyclun. But it's got a happy ending because we got here safely and on time. So my job today is really to wind up this excellent conference. And I'd like to thank Capital Law, AREP, JLL, Transport for Wales, Cardiff University, the Institute of Welsh Affairs, and my friend, the amazing Professor Mark Barry, for holding this conference today. And I'd also like to thank the sponsors, Acorn, Cardiff Capital Region, Cogitamus, Freshwater, Furrer and Frey, and Incomera. And I'd also like to thank Nora, the tremendous artist who is depicting very creatively what we've been talking about today. Thank you, Nora. And I think it's fair to say that when it comes to rail, Wales is fast developing a reputation as a place where some of the most interesting innovations in the industry are taking place. The Welsh Government's announcement of a new Wales and Border rail franchise, with £5 billion of investment planned in new services, new infrastructure and new rolling stock over the next decade and a half. The idea of Metro has, for the past few years, helped people rethink and reimagine travel in and around the South East Wales area. The investments being made by CAF, the Spanish train manufacturer, thanks to Welsh Government support, in Newport, has brought 300 high-quality new jobs to the area. Major new ideas such as a £100 million rail maintenance depot in Tafts Wells and the possibility of another £100 million project, a new rail testing facility in my own area of Ontloin at the top of the Dyles Valley. And these have helped people see the possibilities of investment in their local area. Almost in the space of a couple of years, Wales has developed the seeds of a vibrant and exciting rail industry, and in doing so helped develop a renewed, revitalised future for rail as part of an integrated, multimodal transport system that can be the bedrock of growth and economic renewal. At this point, I want to pay tribute to the person who has driven that vision forward, First Minister Carwyn Jones. His commitment to developing Metro and turning it into a tangible transport vision for the future has been crucial in helping us get to where we are today. His leadership has been vital to help build a new Welsh rail industry we are developing, and I know that he will continue to play an important role in the future of our Welsh rail over the next few years. As the Shadow Secretary of State for Wales, I have been clear that what I want is a future UK Labour government to deliver for Wales to support that vision. As the Cabinet Secretary for Economic and Transport, Ken Skates has said many times, the UK Tory government needs to step up to the plate with investment that has been sadly lacking over recent years. Since 2011, just a little more than 1% of rail enhancement funding across Great Britain has found its way to Wales. Despite rail infrastructure being a UK government responsibility, the Welsh Government has itself put more funding into rail infrastructure enhancements than the UK Government since 2011. The cancellation of electrification to Swansea, already mentioned, will only exacerbate this already unacceptable situation. And with so much more important investment being made in HS2 to improve journey times between London and the North West, we cannot allow Wales to be left behind as a location for inward investment. That's why a future UK Labour government will invest in Wales and ensure our network has the right connections to take advantage of investments across the UK. We have committed that the next UK Labour government will complete electrification all the way to Swansea and will ensure that the North Wales Main Line is modernised and has the right connections into the new HS2 line. And I'm pleased to reaffirm a future UK Labour government will bring our railways back into public hands. As a lifelong supporter of devolution, I've always been a strong advocate of giving the Welsh Government a leading role in helping develop our rail and wider transport network. The development of transport for Wales gives us a unique opportunity to begin to build a metro system that genuinely delivers for the region. The Welsh Government has now set out its plans to deliver on the next phase of work between now and 2023. 100% electric traction on all trains operating on Valleys lines, which pass through Cardiff Queen Street. A doubling of services with 4 trains an hour from Treherbert, Aberdare and Merthyr from 2022 and Rumney from 2023, with the Sunday service providing 2 trains per hour on all of these lines from 2024. A doubling of services on the Ebbw-Vale line from 2021 and on the Vale of Glamorgan line from 2023. 60% more seats, and a fleet of modern and highly accessible on-street capable metro vehicles to serve the Taff Vale and City lines, and new innovative tri-mode trains for the Rumney, Croydon, Penarth, Barry and Vale of Glamorgan lines to allow for through services to the non-electrified lines south and west of Cardiff Centre. And just as the Welsh Government has done with its new economic contract, public investment with a social purpose is a cornerstone of their approach to rail. And working with our trade union partners, they are safeguarding the conditions of those people who work on our rail network by keeping a guard on every train. Recognising that transport is one of the biggest emitters of carbon in Wales, I'm also delighted that 100% of the electricity used for the South Wales Metro lines will be sourced from renewable energy. 50% of that renewable energy will be sourced from within Wales. These plans will lead to a 25% reduction in carbon emissions across the entire Wales and Borders network, with 0 carbon emissions on the lines which run through Cardiff Queen Street. This will be a rail network truly fit for future generations. But as today's conference makes clear, this is just the start. The next phase of work to modernise the existing infrastructure will then become the platform upon which future extensions of the metro can then be built. And there's an important point to be made here. As Ken Skates has already said, although the Welsh Government's new economic action plan, this is an opportunity not just to build a modern integrated transport system, but, but to do something more ambitious, and that is to re-energise the economy of South Wales. By harnessing the potential of this investment, we can fundamentally rethink the role of transport in economic development. We can use this as a once-in-a-generation opportunity to begin to design, plan, and deliver economic growth. To develop our metro ideas beyond simple rail into effective integration between rail, bus, active travel, and strategic park and ride. And to strategically link up planning of new public services such as housing, skills development, and regeneration are done on a new and more ambitious regional footprint. A metro system designed, delivered, and genuinely for Wales. But we know there are challenges ahead. By their very nature, metro systems across the world take time to deliver. Metrolink in Manchester is over 25 years old. London and Boston have been building theirs for over a century. It will take time to see it through. But I have no doubt that if we get this right, it will help this region grow and expand over the coming years. And we will do that by working together and by having those conversations, as my great friend, Professor Mark Barry, has said. And my glass of soy milk is always half full, so I'm optimistic about the future, and thank you again for allowing me to address you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Secretary of State. There's just one final session to come, but before I come to that, I just want to tell everybody that there is a book of essays, really, around this metro issue that we are publishing with this conference. There is a PDF available, I think, on the website of the Institute of Welsh Affairs, iwa.org.uk. If you want a hard copy, best, I think, to send an email in to Mark Barry, whose address is on the back of this, on the back of your programme, rather. If there is sufficient demand, we will actually get some more printed. We've had some printed because there is a necessary distribution. But if you want hard copies yourself, I suggest you get in touch with Mark. Now, finally, earlier this afternoon, we addressed the cultural challenge of the metro. And we thought we shouldn't actually finish the day without having some of the real thing. I can think of no one better to give it to us than Peter Finch. He is a literary entrepreneur, author of more than 25 books of poetry, explorer of the city's history, I think in three books of real Cardiff, an exercise in psychogeography. One critic has said that the man is like Alka-Seltzer. His words and sounds fly at you and fizz in your face. Well, Peter Finch, fizz away.
Thanks, Geraint. Of course, in Cardiff, we're different. We all know this. Our accent is not the same as other people's. Ack, ack, the lack in Cardiff Am's pack. You know how it goes, the whole thing. The poet John Tripp said that he knew where that accent stopped and the more melodious one from the valleys began. And he'd identified this as the bar of the Lewis Arms in Tongwynless. Now, thousands of valleys people visit the capital every day to work. One of our great failings when we tried to bid for the capital of culture back a decade or more ago, Liverpool won it. We didn't get it, and we didn't get it. It was said because we, in Cardiff, ignored our valleys. We didn't turn to face in that direction. Cardiff Queen Street's the second busiest station in Wales with 3 million entrances and exits annually, but Cardiffians largely ignore this. We might be the capital, but one it seems that everyone in the rest of Wales is suspicious about. Now, future planners have proposed many ways of overcoming this difficulty, usually involving moving capital functions elsewhere. My own is much simpler. It's a sort of J.G. Ballard solution, as we're constrained by that Caerphilly Ridge to the north of the city. Let's move it. Let's get rid of it. If we demolished Caerphilly Mountain, the city would see the valleys. It would make the whole of the Cardiff capital region one. So what would the future city look like? If I arrive in the Cardiff future aboard HGL's time machine, how will it be? Will it be a Mad Max dystopia? Will it be like that? Will it be a place of order and light, full of Dandare glass domes with space cars flying between its towers? Already that place where imaginative fiction and progressive architecture meet is turning into reality. In Holland, where the polders lie lower than our own Wentloog flatlands, houses have been constructed which float in times of flood. Cities will stand on rails, which will enable them to be hauled back up from encroaching water. They will fly, these future municipalities, drift among the clouds in their cloaks of antimatter. If such a future is too far-fetched, then the much nearer one of meshing interminable conurbation is by no means impossible. Cardiff becomes Newport, Newport becomes Cardiff. We all hold municipal hands with the endless townships rolling north. Those huge signs you meet immediately east of St. Mellon's that welcome you in bold print to Newport will become redundant. Out beyond the bay, in an estuarine water world crisscrossed by barrages and electricity-generating lagoons, the new city districts of the moneyed will spread across artificial islands. West Home, East Home, Denny South. Great conductor cables will take the megawatts landwards to our ever-consuming world. A Western powerhouse in name as well as fact. On the land released by Caerphilly Mountain, the green belt, already reduced to the green wedge, will have shrunk further to become the green border, the green triangle, green patch, and possibly even the green smudge. In this new curvilinear maze, as car transport will be impossible, the new Cardiffian, the new South Walian will walk, will cycle, or, you know, they'll go on the metro. From the car, blessed relief. Cities are never finished. They are built and then they are rebuilt. After that, they are rebuilt again. The process never ends. That's real Cardiff, the flourishing city, the one I'm proud to come from. And here's a poem. This is a bit of history. The poem's called Cardiff, and I wrote it a little while ago, but it still has a fair amount of relevance. At the start, nothing definite. The sandy frith of the river, a fort, a track into the heathland, the reach of the sea, then names. Taff, Ely, Rumney, Maindy, Cruis Bachan, Catays. Few streets, Shoemaker, Working, Duck, Wharton, Hounder Manaby, the Booth Hall, the Town Cross, mudflats, boat stays. In command, immigrant merchants, manipulators, Hugo, Johannes, Walterus Parvus, Robertus de Cardiff, Petrus de Cardiff Niger, Walteri Longhi, Alanus, all foreigners, this is the Welsh way. Power. Caetuc, Coed ar Hen Ŵr, Maindy Bach, Carreg Picker, bilingual officials, ascendant chapels, Cardiff grows. Visitors from Bristol find us short, gregarious, singers, drinkers, fish sellers, panhandlers, street peddlers, beggars, gargling ruffians in stovepipe hats. I need not remind you that Welsh is the common vernacular of Cardiff. Official advice to travellers. There is no reason why these Aboriginals should not be made to speak the King's English. Letter to local paper. King George is an effing German. Slogan on wall. Then coal. We name our burgeoning streets after battles, foreigners, campaigns, soldiers, poets, statesmen, engineers, scientists, metals, precious stones, the heavenly bodies, anything pronounceable by coal owners, not yet pastoral England, Fairwood, Sweetbriar, Mallard's Reach, but soon. Now glass. When the coal city fails and the brick city crumbles, we build a glass city with borrowed money. We close down everything that smells. We sell shoes, beds, and fast-track mortgages from vast, shining emporia. This is not honest toil. This is sweatless opportunism. We do it well. Question, how Welsh do you feel? Answer, we don't. Summary of answers to intelligence test. Wales is near Spain. Alexander Cordell is a local boxer. We have a flag with a red dog on it. Llywelyn Ap Gruffydd is a mystery. There are 52 nightclubs in our city centre. We have been to them all. 60% of residents said, 60% of residents questioned said Cardiff was not yet their idea of a Welsh cultural epicentre. 5% could not pronounce epicentre. And the rest thought they were still living in Avon. Diolch yn fawr.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Peter Finch. One message before we finish. Will you make sure that you leave your simultaneous translation earphones? Leave them in this room, please. Don't take them out of the room. And finally, can I thank Chris Knott, Capital Law. Can I thank Lowry and Clara and the whole of the Capital Law team, really, for the effort they've made to put this day together. And can I thank you all for coming. Thank you.